from notes. There are plenty of misprints and mistakes in published notes. So my goal is to introduction to O-minimality, basically to demonstrate, well, first of all, to state correctly definitions and basic properties, and also to demonstrate very basic tools that are used in O-minimality, the way we prove some results, some tricks of O-minimality. This is my goal, and I'm not going to do any hard proof, I'm going to skip all hard proofs. And my presentation is based basically on three sources. One source is, of course, Klaus Van Andrie's book, Ten Geometry and O-minimal Structures. It contains everything. Secondly, the notes all by Dougald MacPherson about O-minimality and something around it. And third source was a copy of Spekerzil notes for tutorials he gave a couple years ago. So the law proves that I did in this course, basically just combination of many notes and some of my experience. So O-minimal structures are very special first order. Order structures, and by order structures, I mean first order structure where one of binary predicates is fixed, and this binary predicate actually defines a dense linear order of them. So we always look at first order structure where we have also dense linear order definable. So work with respect to dense linear order for the structure. We are going to fix some order structure. And now that some conventions, definable sets, etc., always mean definable in the structure. So order implies some predicates and functions. And we are going to use parameters. Interval always means interval in M, endpoints are in M, and plus or minus infinity. A function we call definable, it is graph is definable. In our structure, partial function definable means this graph is definable set. The structure we are working in. Notation wise, complement of the set is at C, dependent. So order pairs are denoted by A, B in these brackets, left-hand triangle. Thus, to distinguish it from interval A, B. And what this ordering does, it actually gives us very nice, or not so nice, but very simple topology on M. We have order topology, so open sets of M are open intervals. Basis for open sets of M are open intervals. And we have topology on NK, on the has taken product topology. So we use ordering to get a topology on M. Very kind of nice from the point of view definability topology. All intervals are definable. So order structure. And so what can be defined in order structure? Very basics, just of playing around with epsilon delta definitions or just rewriting standard definition. If you have set X definable in MN, then closure is also going to be definable. So it's a formula that defines this set. And interior of X are also definable. It's exercise. Basically, writing definition of closure and interior by first order formula. Very simple. Now, if you have definable set A in MN and definable function, so the graph is definable, then the set of points where F is continuous is definable. Again, just writing down definition of to be continuous. And even more, the set is definable, and the function that sends each X, this set, to the limit is also definable. You can write formula to define the graph of this function. So these are basics of definability, just using definitions. And even more, so now we talk about uniformity in parameters. So uniformity in parameters, so we have a family of sets, XA, which are parameterized by some tuples in MK. I'm not writing bars over tuples, so A is in MK. So this family of sets, each XA is a subset of MN, is called uniformly definable if there is definable set X in MK equals MN such that every XA is just a fiber. You fix first coordinates A, and then XA is exactly all X's define this set. So idea is very simple. Each XA is defined by the same formula T of X is just very random. The formula stays the same. This formula T X. U defines the set X. So once we have uniformly definable family of sets, then closure is also uniformly definable in parameters. So this definition of closure, first order definition, is very uniform in parameters. And also all the set of A's where each MA is discrete is going to be definable set of parameters. Yes, it's XA, etc. Plenty of misprints. Clicker doesn't work. XA is discrete, or all A's where XA is open, all A's where it's closed, is also a definable subset. So you can definably distinguish open sets from closed, etc., etc. You can always describe them. These are very basic properties of ordered structures and first order definitions. Unfortunately, general topology, order topology on these order structures, if you look from a classical point of view, is actually very, very bad. If you are trying to do any type of analysis in order structures that are not Archimedean and complete, doing what Zhishtov talked about power series, we cannot do it. If you take, well, Aleph 1 saturated means, say, very big ordered structure, but nothing is convergent there. This exercise, sequence is convergent if and only if it's actually eventually constant. There's no any convergence here. The space set M itself is not topologically connected. It's actually almost, well, it's disconnected everywhere. And only compact subsets are going to be finite sets in this case. So actually, from the point of view of usual topology, these structures are going to be, or the structures are very, very bad. So we can change notion of connectedness, it's actually going to help, to the notion of definable connectedness. So topologically, set is connected if it doesn't contain proper, non-empty, open and closed subset. So definable connectedness means it doesn't contain open and closed definable subset. And a change somehow notion of it, or this way we are going to get plenty of definably connected sets later on. So idea, at least in O-minimality, if you work in general O-minimal structure, general topology is very, very bad. Totally disconnected, nothing is convergent. Definably is actually quite nice. You are going to get plenty of definably connected sets. So definably connected, the same definition, but only we look at definable open sets. And now, basic exercise, playing again with definability. Image of definably connected set on a definable continuous map is definably connected. The same as for usual topologically connected sets. Image of a connected set on the continuous map is connected. Secondly, taking unions, we have two definable connected sets, x1, x2. So the closure of x1 and x2 are not disjoint, then union is going to be definably connected. This is just a basic exercise how to play around with definable connectedness. So it behaves almost as usual connectedness, but has much better properties. And now we are going to basic definition of all minimal structures. So if you look at what model theory does, model theory has very nice tools that allows us to study definable sets and definable maps. So in model theory, we look at category of definable sets, definable maps, and studied them. And of course, in all of mathematics, undefinable sets and definable maps are very complicated, and nothing can be said about something trivial. Same as very general theorems about all objects can be only trivial theorems. So to allow us to use tools of model theory, we need to assume some tameness of definable sets. So we want our definable sets not to be very complicated, at least. And requirements in all minimal structures, in all the minimal structures, so we put requirements only on subsets of a line, on M itself. Subsets of M must be as simple as possible. Once we have order, we can always define intervals. They are definable. We also have points defined by formula x equals a. These are basic definable sets. So our minimal definition is the only definable subsets of M are finite units of points and intervals, as simple as possible on M. No any requirements on subsets of M2, M3, Mn, etc. In fact, they can be very, very complicated. Only requirements on subsets of M. And so first, some basic examples of all minimal structures. Take just dense linear order, M with ordering and nothing else. No functions, equifunctions, no predicates. This structure is densely, is all minimal. The reason is we have quantifier elimination for this structure. And by quantifier elimination, the only basic definable sets are x less than a on a line. X equals a less than x. So exactly a set we allowed in the definition of ominimality. And now, no quantifier, we have elimination. So we allow to take only Boolean combinations. And this exercise, if you take finite union of points and intervals, such sets, now you apply some finite Boolean combinations, all you get is just finite unions of points and open intervals. So once your basic sets are finite unions of points and intervals, all Boolean combinations have the same form. And quantifiers can be eliminated. First example. Next example, second type of ominimal structures, ordered vector spaces over ordered fields. So we have V, ordering on V, plus the usual vector spaces. And for each element in field, we have unary function lambda k. So claim is, exercise, show it is all minimal. Again, we know such structure has quantifier elimination. This exercise to show it's all minimal. Next, the field of real numbers, the ordered fields. Again, it is all minimal. It's actually playing around with quantifier-free formulas, the same idea as for dense linear orders. The only difference is subsets of reals defined in this structure without quantifiers. Definitions are slightly more complicated, but very basic kind of reasoning shows that there are going to be fine tunings of points and intervals. Again, this exercise can be found in any book. And this is probably a first non-trivial example in the sense the subsets of reals defined in this structure are very, very simple, just on a line. Fine tunings of points and intervals. Going to R2, R3, etc., we have all semi-algebraic geometry sitting there. So subsets of Rn defined in this structure are quite complicated. So in all minimality, the only requirement is subsets of line are as simple as possible. So these are examples and basic definition. Now, there are some very elementary exercises. I will maybe point out something which is interesting. Number one, if you assume all minimality, the assumption about M, every interval in M is going to be definably connected. It's very important. in arguments. Argue by induction, next exercise, MN, or definable subsets, or MN itself is definably connected. So you cannot split MN definably into a joint union of open sets, non-trivially. For definable functions, we have intermediate value theorem. You have two definable continuous functions on the interval, such that on the, for all x, they're different, well, then either f is greater than g or less than g everywhere. It follows basically from one, from definable connectedness. That's why it's so important notion. Every infinite subset of M, definable subset, contains an interval, follows from definition. For definable subset of M, the frontier of A is finite, always. Because for interval, frontier is just end points. For points, the point itself. So the frontier of finite unions of points at intervals, you get finite subsets. Number 7 is a nice but actually elementary exercise. If you have uniformly definable family of subsets of M, again, then a set of parameters A, where XA is finite, the set is definable. In first order logic, we cannot say the set is finite. So to do number 7, we need to use some trick. How to distinguish finite fiber from infinite fiber. It's elementary, but not so straightforward. You cannot write definition, just all definition to be finite in general. But it works for O-minimal structures. Number 8, you take ordered group, which is O-minimal. Then this group has no proper definable subgroups, non-trivial, and actually group is abelian. So only ordered O-minimal groups are abelian groups. Number 9 exercise, take any ordered field. Assume the field is O-minimal. Then actually field is real closed, meaning every positive element has square roots, every polynomial of odd degree has zero. And now claim 1.7, this first very basic trick of O-minimality. Take any X definable subset of M. Take any point in M. Then exactly one of the following holds. Some small interval A epsilon contains in X, or A epsilon is in the closure of X. It follows very elementary from the definition of O-minimality, very easy exercise. That's one of the first tricks. You can always find like interval if you cover M by cover M by definable set, let's say X is blue and the rest is black. Take any point, the small interval to the right of A is either all blue or either all black. So you can always like uniformly pick points close to A. It's a basic trick, we are going to use it in exercise. Now, the first fundamental result is take any O-minimal structure M. The definition of O-minimality is only about structure M, nothing about elementarily equivalent structures. So main theorem is if N is elementarily equivalent to M, then N is also O-minimal. And actually proving this result, well, people who prove this result, had to develop almost all fundamentals of O-minimality. So proof of this result contains big chunk of O-minimality, cell decomposition, Fontanistic, so I'm going to talk about it. So why it is important? Well, to use O-minimality, if from the point of view of model theory, we want to go to elementary extensions. For example, working in the reals, from the point of view of, if you want to do model theory, reals are not big enough. You don't have infinitesimals. So you don't have generic points, if you wish, in the reals. So doing model theory, we would like to go to elementary extension, prove something working in elementary extension, some first order property of the structure, because of its elementary extension, everything is true in elementary extension is true in your base model. So then we can come back, for example, to the reals. This is how model theory works. But to work in elementary extension, for example, the field of reals or some O-minimal structure on the reals, we need to know that this elementary extension is O-minimal. So this is like a very basic fact. And how do we use this trick of going to elementary extension? So Krzysztof Kurdecka mentioned the inverse function theorem. The actual proof for the reals of the inverse function theorem goes, well, you need to estimate, do plenty of estimation. So project that I assign to students is exactly going to elementary extensions for O-minimal structures. It's possible to prove inverse function theorem for O-minimal extensions of the reals without doing any estimates, just using non-standard infinitesimal analysis. At least there is no any estimates. I think it's proof is slightly maybe cleaner in this way, but it works only for in O-minimal case. So it's very important from the point of view of model theory, but also this fact, or this main theorem, that if M is O-minimal, every elementary equivalent is O-minimal, is equivalent to the following statement. In M itself, we have uniform finiteness. If we have uniformly definable family of subsets of M, then there is upper bound on the size of finite fibers. There is K in M, such that if set XK has size greater than K, XA is infinite. It's exactly this uniform finiteness. And this equivalent to the statement about elementary extensions to be, elementary constructions to be O-minimal. Proof exercise. Well, 2.2, I will skip it. It refers to the same notion like O-minimal was first defined called strongly minimal, where this property is not true. I'm going to skip it. So on the way to prove this theorem, actually is proved using cell decomposition. I think the only known proof for this fact is doing cell decomposition. Describe more or less all definable subsets of M to the power K. This is going to be our goal. And it's done by induction on power of M. So first sub-goal is Montanisky theorem. And it says, take any definable function from M to M. And definable is extremely important. Now this function is piecewise continuous and monotone. So all definable functions are actually very, very nice from M to M. You can divide M into finitely many intervals, and on each interval function is going to be continuous and strictly monotone. This is our first goal, how from the definition of O minimality extract, prove this result. And first, well, some claims. So claim number one. So we have an interval I in M and definable function, no assumption about continuity, such that f of x is greater than x. Then actually you can find subinterval j in I and some c such that f of x is greater than c everywhere. So statement is trivial if you assume Montanisky theorem. If f of x is monotone, there are only two cases. F is decreasing on interval, then it's very easy to pick such C. Take f of a, where f is leftmost point. If f is decreasing, it's still increasing, it's still possible to choose such interval. It's not a big deal. You don't have Montanisty yet, actually. We need claim to prove Montanicity. So we are trying somehow to distinguish two cases. F is going to be increasing on interval or decreasing. So case one is going to be exactly when f is increasing on some interval a epsilon. So our I is our integral pi. Left most point is a. The function f definable. The only condition is that x is greater than x. So case one is for some small interval, the function f is increasing. So to describe this case, we create this set D. All these, that f, so f of g is greater than f of x for all x in AG. This is our set A, D. So now, case one, this some epsilon, that interval A epsilon is in B. It exactly means f is increasing on A epsilon. That's how B is defined. So if f is increasing on A epsilon, then we can find is going to be our f of a is our f of epsilon. So take any interval here and put this point to be c. Because of increasing f of x in this interval j is going to be greater than f of a. So this is a case when our function is actually increasing on some interval a epsilon. Case two, not case one, it means a epsilon is not in B interval for any epsilon. But it's very, what I said, very basic tool means when there is epsilon, size a epsilon is in the complement of C. The function does have to be like decreasing on a epsilon, but you can mimic if this decreasing. So you can decrease epsilon slightly. So now interval a epsilon belongs to set B. All interval. C complement. Now take C to be f of epsilon. And now claim is I can find interval j here. So that f of j is going to be on this side somewhere. The right of c. To find interval to be the right of c, the definable set property. To find interval, we just need to find infinite set. The infinite set of x's inside a epsilon. So f of x is greater than epsilon. Every infinite definable set contains an interval. And now let's play a game. Ask why epsilon is not in B. Epsilon is not in B because this point, x, is 0. So f of x 0 is greater than epsilon. That's why epsilon is not in B. Why x 0 is not in B? Because three sub x1 less x0 whose value is greater than value at x0. Continue the game, you get infinite sequence of xi's, or in this case are ti's increasing. So now we have infinite set of t's. So the value of f is greater than c. From any infinite definable set, we can choose interval. It's very first basic claim. Second technical, well, theorem is somehow a minimal version of a Ramsey theorem. Suppose you have open interval I in M,
and you look at I cross I. Inside I cross I, we have a definable set x. Then, if you can, use Ramsey's theorem, set, there is infinite subset of I, so the pairs of the subset are either all in x or all out of x. So claim is not only you can pick infinite subset of I, we can actually pick interval j in I,
size that all pairs, different pairs from J, X and Y, X and Y, all of them are either in X or all of them are in the complement. So it's kind of a basic Ramsey theorem, but definable version. You can find the whole interval. And proof, well, proof uses the previous one. We can look at
if our X is diagonal, look at point A and see if there is some small interval above A, which is in X.
So XA are all these fibers, and Y are all sets of such elements.
Is A in Y? This element is not in Y. Because interval, small interval above the set is not in X.
And now, then, if that Y is finite, there are only finitely many such A's, then replace Y. Well, the set of A's where small interval to the right of A and A is in the complement is infinite. So we can replace X by the complement and assume that the set of Y is infinite. So set of elements where small interval
about diagonal, about this pi, A,
is an X.
So this is set of all Y.
And now, for every A in Y, okay. So Y is infinite, contains some interval,
J prime. So for each A in J prime is some interval above A to the prime is L and A A epsilon all fiber is in S peak slash maximum epsilon X sub. Sub exists because set is definable. So you get definable function.
And this function satisfies the previous claim. F of A is greater than A. This interval is not empty. Applying the previous claim, you can find some interval, J, and see that function is greater than this constant, C. It is exactly, then, this J satisfies our conclusion of our statement. All points are inside the set. So it's kind of definable or minimal version of Ramsey theorem. And now once you do it for one set, you can do it for a family. If you can cover I cross I by a finite family of definable subsets xi, you can find interval j in I so that all pairs from j, ab with a less than b, are covered I in the same set xk. This sum xk contains pairs from some interval j. This is a definable version of Ramsey statement. And now from this statement we are going to get Montagnisti theorem. Take a definable function from I to M, where I is interval. We can divide I into finitely many subintervals by points a1, am, so that on each interval ai, ai plus 1, our function is either constant or strictly monotone plus continuous. This Montagnisti theorem, so every definable function is piecewise monotone and continuous. So proof. First, let's show Montagnisti. Let's look at three definable subsets of M. or I, actually, should be just I. First, A equality. Take all x in I, point x in I, where our function f is locally constant near x. In some neighborhood of x, this open interval around x, function is constant. A is less than, locally it is strictly increasing. A greater, f is locally strictly decreasing in some open neighborhood of x. Three definable sets. First, we claim that this set cover I up to a finitely many points. It's how first we subdivide our interval. Proof, assume not. Then this I, this complement to these three sets inside I, contains an interval j. Every infinite definable set contains interval. And now we are going to use Ramsey theorem. So this interval j, look at j squared, and color, put colors on pairs in j squared. X and y in j squared. Well, there are three types of squares. Less, equality, greater. So for equality, you look at x and y in j squared, where f of x equals f y less and greater, etc., etc. So we definitely consider all possibilities for pairs. So we cover j cross j. Now, by the definable version of Ramsey theorem, inside j, there is open interval j prime, so all ordered pairs from j prime, a less than b, are in the same x squared. And if x squared, if you look at x equality, it basically means, it means exactly f is going to be constant on j prime for all x and y in j prime of x equals f y. If it's less than, means function is going to be strictly increasing on j prime. So you get contradiction. It means, contradiction implies, that I, the complement, so I is covered up to finitely many points by these three definable sets. So you can now divide I into finitely many intervals, so that each interval is in one of these sets. And now we have function on the subintervals. On each subinterval, function is either locally constant, or locally increasing, or locally decreasing. In our exercise, take definable function is locally constant, then it's going to be constant on interval. If it's locally increasing, it's going to be increasing. Locally decreasing is going to be decreasing. This way, after this step, we can divide interval I into finitely many subintervals, and on each interval function is either constant, decreasing, or increasing. No continuity yet, only monotonicity. Continuity follows easily from the very first step. So after using the first step, we subdivide I into subintervals. So we can assume on this subinterval function is monotone. We need to show that actually we can subdivide into some subintervals to get continuity. So claim is points where f is continuous, set of points, is definable. We need to show that function is continuous almost everywhere, so outside of finitely many points. We can subdivide further. So let's claim if function is constant on interval, definitely going to be continuous on the interval. So claim is, assume function is, definable function is, strictly increasing on interval. There's going to be continuous at all but finitely many points. So set of points where function is continuous is definable. You need to show that complement is actually finite. If the complement is fine, is infinite, this definable set, it contains an interval. So we get an interval where function is nowhere continuous. Apply first step, monotonicity. You can find interval inside of interval j, where function is nowhere continuous, the fighters interval, they pass it strictly monotone. And then look at the image with interval J under F. By O minimality, it's fine tuning of points and intervals. Because F is strictly monotone, it's 1-to-1, so image is going to be infinite. It contains an interval. Take pre-image, show that F is continuous on the pre-image. For strictly monotone functions, it's quite elementary. So this way, you get function. Every function piecewise is a constant, strictly increasing or decreasing, follows just from our minimality. So first basic step, so we have nice properties for functions from M to M. And we also have nice description of sets inside M. Next step is to describe, well, to put some corollary from monotonicity and continuity theorem. Take any definable function from A, B to M. Then for every C, so you don't assume function is continuous, no assumptions, just definable. For every C, both one-sided limits exist in extended M. So limits can be plus or minus infinity also. It follows from monotonicity and continuity. Because to the right of point C, functions either strictly increasing, decreasing, or constant. And to point 8, to take definable continuous function on a closed interval, then F must take maximum and minimum values on this interval. First, you can just draw the graph of function for some pieces, increasing, decreasing, constant, increasing, decreasing. Look at maximum, minimum points. So very simple. Corollary from monotonicity. So once we know functions from M to M, and we have description of subsets of M, points and intervals, definable subsets. Next step is to describe subsets of M squared. We actually now we'll have more complicated sets. So first is to do uniform finiteness for subsets of M squared. So now for set A in M squared and X in M, by X you'll denote fiber are the projection of the first coordinates. So vertical fibers in the set A. So goal is to show this uniform finiteness for subsets of A squared. Take any definable subset of M squared, size it for each X, the fiber above X, AX, is finite. Then this uniform bound on all these finite sets. There is K bounds all the sets. And remember that if you have uniformly definable family, the set of parameters where set is finite is definable. So it implies if you take any subset of M squared, then there is K natural numbers, so that AX less than K, if and only if it is finite. Because set of elements where fiber is finite is definable. So sets where fibers are finite, well, they're nice, but slightly more convenient to work is the so-called small sets. So definition, set is small if the set of parameters where set is infinite is actually finite. Maybe I'll just describe general ideology, small, big, and large. So there are three types of definable sets, size-wise. Small, big, and large.
Very nice also exercise. To understand for the to exercise. Let's define small sets, small definable sets by induction. take subset of A in M, finally. We call A small. It is finite. Which makes sense. Definable subsets of line, unions of points with intervals, size-wise or dimension-wise, intervals are deep sets. Points are small. One. Number two. Take A in M, M plus 1. Call it small if this is B in M, M, such that we set A, B equals small. So we define this by induction, but it seems like this definition depends on the way we order our coordinates. Because we go from the first coordinate to second, you look only at the way it was final. So at this point, it actually doesn't depend on the way we order our coordinates. A, definable A, is small, even only if the interior of M is M. So this kind of combinatorial counting, finite, not finite, it actually has topological properties. Smallness corresponds to empty interior. And then this division into three types of sets. Big means not small. It contains some, well, interior is not empty, it contains an open box. Large complement is small. Now our goal is, let's take a definable small subset of M squared. Then we can partition M into finitely many intervals so that on every open interval the number of points is the same. We may have open intervals, but there will be finitely many such points. Almost everywhere else, we have finitely many points. Then, you touch set, small set. We can divide the whole line into finitely many intervals such the number of points above any point, it'll be the same on the whole interval. But now, suppose in this interval we have exactly KI points. We have every point. We can pick the smallest point. So now we have definable function for the interval into M, picking the smallest point in the final. Pick second point, third, etc. We get the definable functions, first, second, kth point. Every definable function is piecewise continuous. So in fact, such small set, after we divide the subinterval, but each subinterval you look just as union of breadth of k by continuous functions. This description of small sets in M2. All definable sets where almost all fibers are finite. The number of points in subintervals may be different, but above each subinterval, so we get union of breadth of k functions. It's not all. It's only for small sets, but actually it's going to, it implies description of all definable subsets of M squared. From description of small sets, just very small step to get description of all definable subsets. Why? Take any point A. Look at the subset fiber above A. I will take X in M squared A. Take point A in M and look at the fiber above A. Now we have added the definable set. This our set X. Above each point A, we have fiber. Now, let's look at the family of frontiers of each X A. Each XA is definable subset of M. Frontier of XA is going to be finite. So this family is going to be exactly family of finite sets. We know how family of finite sets in M squared look like. After you divide M into finite interval, we get finite union of defining continuous function. So our friend here will look like on each interval as defining function. Continuous. But now, between these two functions, either everywhere this interval belongs to XA or belongs to its complement. There's no any other case, otherwise we can extra point in the frontier. So it means after we subdivide slightly more, what we get that inside of this state in two functions, we have either everywhere X or its complement. It's going to lead exactly the same decomposition for the final sets of X in M squared. So basically this model theoretic uniform finiteness, in this case, is extremely related to cell decompositions. They're very, very connected. True in one, equal to another, and vice versa. This uniform finiteness plus spontaneity almost automatically gives cell decomposition. That's why somehow model theory and geometry is very, very related to these omeo structures.
But actually, we'll finish tomorrow. Finish the slam, just few claims, and then state self-decomposition theorem. That's all for today.